This is Talk of the Nation. Neil Conan is on vacation. I'm John Donvan in Washington on loan from ABC News and Nightline. Well, you know how much we agonize over kids playing computer games. It's going to shrink their brains, right? Or so we tell them as we pry them off the keyboard. So then why are older Americans, senior citizens, and boomers who only pretend they're not senior citizens, why are they being encouraged by some actually to start playing certain computer games with the implicit message from the game makers that they are good for you, good for the aging brain? Just consider some of the names of these games: Brain Fitness Program 2.0, Brain Age Squared, Mind Fit. But can a game really fight off memory loss? Have they been tested and proven? What do we really know about keeping healthy and up to date? The gray matter of the gray-haired. Later on this hour, does the U.S. owe it to Iraqi refugees to give them a path into this country? But first, mind games. If you have tried these games, we want to know, do they work? And if you're in the market for brain exercise, what questions do you have about them? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also comment on our blog. It's at npr.org/blog of the nation. Well, Art Kramer is a professor of neuroscience and psychology at the University of Illinois. He has actually tried most of these memory programs, and he can fill us in on the science behind them if he remembers any of them. Today, he joins us from his office in Champaign, Illinois. Welcome to the show, Art. How are you?
Okay. How are you? And good. I do remember a few.
So maybe it works. Okay. We also have Gary Small on the line. He's in his hotel in Santa Barbara. Gary Small is director of the UCLA Center on Aging and the author of The Memory Bible. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be on the show. And I had to pull myself away from my computer long enough to do this.
I'm glad you could make it, that you could get your fingers off the keyboards. Art, I want to start with you. And the basic question, the obvious question on all of this, does it work?
It all depends on what you mean by work. If the question is, can you get better at the various games and tasks that you can perform as part of these computer-based programs, such as Brain Age or Positive Science or Mind Fit or what have you, the answer is yes. You can clearly get better at a variety of exercises that have to do with memory, rapidly extracting information from the visual or auditory environment, making decisions, moving more quickly, and so forth. You can also retain those skills over a period of a number of months, studies show. However, on the other hand, if the question is, do these skills generalize or transfer beyond what's being trained in the computer-based task, the question is, we don't know yet. There hasn't been enough study, enough randomized clinical trials, the gold standard of medical research, to tell whether playing computer-based games will transfer to real-world skills such as working at a busy office or driving an automobile or maintaining your independence as we become older.
So in a way, I think what I hear you saying is that my kids obviously do not play video games. I don't let them. But when they're not playing these video games afterwards, say it's a game like bowling with the Wii machine, they might learn how to do the game better, which doesn't mean that they know how to bowl in real life. Is that what you're saying, is you learn the skill that the game is about as opposed to a skill that carries outside?
Right. We've known for at least 100 years that you get better at the skills that you work hard at, that you practice. Whether you get transferred beyond those skills to much more complex and often much more involved real-world skills is certainly an open question. The best way to achieve that is certainly an open question.
Gary, what's your take on this? I know that in the interest of full disclosure, do you have some association with the industry?
Yeah, I do, actually. I helped create a small handheld electronic game called Brain Games for a game company called Radica that Mattel is now selling. And I'm also an advisor to a company, Dacom, which makes Empower, which is a more elaborate, expensive kind of brain exercising device that helps seniors build mental muscle.
But you're also a scientist. Memory is your field.
Yeah, my day job is studying the brain and trying to understand it and try to make reasonable conclusions about what the data shows. And I think Art summarizes it very well, that these kinds of activities do make you better at the activities, But whether they transfer to everyday memory skills and challenges, the data is a little more circumstantial. There are some studies. For example, they found that laparoscopic surgeons, for example, who play video games more than 3 hours each week, had better performance at their surgery.
What does your gut tell you, Gary, as somebody who's actually with the industry? And I'm assuming you're not, based on what you said, I'm assuming you're not actually marketing it along the lines of this will improve your memory.
No, I try to give people a balanced view on what you see. My gut tells me that in some mental activities, you do get better. I mean, you do. In fact, some of the evidence shows that your visual spatial skills will improve to some extent. Some aspects of attention improve. And in some of these computer games, we try to teach basic memory skills, and that will improve as well. And if people practice it, they can get better. What's interesting is that when you started the piece, you talked about some of the negative things about computer games and how particularly kids get addicted to these video games, and it takes them away from their social skills training. They mm-hmm. get bad at direct face-to-face communication.
And put on weight. Art, that's right. Give us a sense of what these games are about. What do you actually, you sit down at the keyboard, I know they're different, what do you do?
The games are fairly varied, and some of them are based more heavily upon the science database than others, but let's take, for example, probably the most popular one. That is Brain Age by Nintendo, and I have no stake in this other than I spent $150 for it. In this particular game, you can do a number of things. You would have numbers come up on the screen in one task and have to pick the highest number, watch people go in and out of a house, an illustrated house, and have to decide how many are still in the house at a certain point of time. Sudoku is part of the Brain Age program, which many people are familiar with, kind of like a crossword puzzle with numbers, and a task called the Stroop task, in which words, colored words, such as the word red, green, or brown, are presented in different colors, and sometimes the color of the ink is consistent with the word and sometimes not, and many, many other tasks. So you're doing these tasks on the computer screen. They're often animated. You're provided with feedback as to how well you perform, and some of the games with respect to a large database of individuals who've played them in the past, and you score points and get feedback as to how well you're doing. You also tend to practice these games, or it's recommended that you do, over periods of weeks and sometimes months.
So it's a big commitment. Well, we've asked all of you to call in with your questions about this, as well as your concerns. The number is 800-989-TALK. And we'd like to go now to Dale in Iowa City. Dale, you're on Talk of the Nation. What would you like to ask about?
Hello, are you talking to Dale?
Yes, I am.
Okay, there's a little sound. Well, I'm 62 years old, and I have a PhD, and it's driving me insane that I can't think of words or names right on the spot, knowing something about brain development. It seems like I have to stop thinking about it and send it over to the right hemisphere so it can make a connection back over the corpus callosum to the left hemisphere.
Dale, have you?
What I'm wondering is,
go ahead.
If things that we did for kids as children, young adults, codgers like me, could help prevent Alzheimer's. So there you go.
Okay. Dale, you're all right with taking your question off the air, and I'm going to rephrase it. You're asking about whether games you played as kids during your childhood could have fended off things like Alzheimer's. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Art, why don't you take a crack at that?
Okay, who should take a crack at it? Gary or I?
Art, please.
Okay. So there is a fairly large and increasing literature, epidemiological literature as well as intervention-based literature that suggests the number of things that we do early on and that we can keep doing throughout our lifespans can be helpful in maintaining a variety of aspects of cognition, memory, attention, decision-making, linguistic processing, and so forth, and also tend to delay the onset of Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. These factors are all controllable. They include diet, that is, eating foods that are low in saturated fat and trans fat and high in antioxidants such as leafy green vegetables and blueberries and strawberries. Having lots of social interactions, whether it's family or friends or what have you, tends to be useful in this respect.
So you're talking about early life, I'm assuming.
I'm talking about throughout the lifespan. You can do this when you're young. You can do this when you're older.
What if you wake up, though, and you're, say, 64, like I think Dell said she is, and you say, oops, and you want to start now?
Many of these things you can start now. You could get involved in social groups, volunteer groups. You can get involved in exercise. We know that exercise has some positive effects on cognitive function.
Would you, Art, recommend any of these games, actually, for somebody at that oops moment?
I think maybe as an adjunct to other things we can do, like taking a walk and talking to a friend, eating a healthier diet, things like that.
Gary, when we're talking about these games, I mean, there are all kinds of games you can play in life. You can play Sudoku, as was mentioned before, is actually the element of one of these games. You can play chess. Why go to the computer when actually you could just pick up a chessboard or even a checkerboard?
Well, you know, I think people feel empowered if they're going to pick up a game that they think will actually help. So there's something about believing in the game that may make a difference, the idea of positive thinking. There was a related study recently where they took hotel workers in Boston. They took a group of them, and they told them that just making the beds gave you enough physical exercise to help your health. And the other group they told nothing to. The volunteers who believed that they were getting healthier from their work actually got healthier. They lost weight. Their blood pressure came down. So there may be something to this placebo effect or the idea that this is doing something positive to you that could give you an extra edge.
Okay.
But I think what's very important when you go out to choose a game and to do something that's mentally stimulating, that you enjoy it, that you have fun, that you train but don't strain your brain, and it's not too difficult but not too easy.
So don't make it work. Well, we're talking about exercise for the brain, whether you can really improve memory and brain function with things like video games. We'll get into some of the other ways you can keep your mind sharp in just a moment, and more of your calls at 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. I'm John Donvan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Donvan in Washington. One of the things we deal with as we get older is the problem of memory loss, with the mind perhaps not being quite as sharp as it used to be. Video game makers are not the only ones offering ways to exercise your brain. It's hard to tell what works and what is just hype. We have two people on board today who study memory and brain function with us. Art Kramer is professor of neuroscience and psychology at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And Dr. Gary Small is director of the UCLA Center on Aging, author of the Memory Bible, among other things. If memory loss is something you worry about, and if you're human, you do, are you doing anything to prevent it? What kinds of things are you forgetting? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and our email address is talk@npr.org. And Art, give us a little lesson on what to expect as you get older. Is, in fact, memory loss inevitable?
Memory loss happens for most of us, but it happens selectively so. So the caller that you had on before mentioned that this phenomena called tip-of-the-tongue phenomena. You know something, but you can't retrieve it. That tends to happen, and tends to happen more often for what are referred to as episodic memories. That is, memories of where I learned something or where I met somebody, what their name is, how that matches up with their face, and so forth, episodic or relational memories. On the other hand, knowing facts and figures, called semantic memory, tends to show a much less of a change as a function of age. So there are different aspects of short-term and long-term memory, things referred to as implicit, in explicit memory that have different time courses of change over the lifespan.
Gary Small, can you drive yourself mad worrying about memory? You know, if you forget where to put the car keys and on a Tuesday and you do it again on a Friday, maybe it's a coincidence, maybe you have a problem, but can you drive yourself crazy thinking about it too much?
Not only can you drive yourself crazy, we've found that when people worry about their memory, the memory performance is not as good. So a lot of people are anxious about these normal age-related memory changes, and certainly if they have a family history of Alzheimer's disease or if they're more frequent or they're under a lot of stress, they're going to worry about it more. It's important if somebody does have a concern that they might want to see their doctor about it, because usually people are in denial when there's a serious memory problem and they don't seek help, yet there are treatments available.
We want to bring our listeners into this conversation. And Ruth in Sacramento, California, you're on Talk of the Nation. Welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. My question is this. What's the relationship between learning a foreign language and memory assistance? In other words, in a computer game, why not, instead of, I've never seen them, nonsense things that you might be learning, why not put something on which would help you learn a foreign language?
Gary, why don't you take a shot at that?
I think that's a great idea, and if you want to start a company, I think you might want to think about it. I don't know that there is that kind of program currently out there. There may be, or it may be under development. One of the things that I like to do when I do the research in this area or develop new products in the area is to try to make it practical, not only fun and engaging, but something that may help people in their everyday life. And learning a foreign language is a great thing to do.
Ruth, are you doing that? Have you started?
Yes, I'm 76 years old. I used to know Spanish. I want to go back to Mexico, and so I'm beginning again with numbers, and much more difficult than it used to be.
Well, they're infinite, for one thing. But is it coming back to you?
Yes, it is, but I think some of the things that he said were interesting in terms of, I feel like, gee whiz, I can't really do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps that's, you know, my own lack of self-confidence.
Well, if I may say, it's easier to learn a language when we're younger. In fact, it peaks when we're several years of age, and our brains are not as good at it. So what I suggest is slow down, give yourself time. If you're really interested and you're enjoying it, it will be a lot easier.
Ruth, right,
thanks.
And also it has some value. That's really what I was trying to get at, is, you know, something that might have value to an older person.
Right, it's not just random memorization,
right,
but it's actually communication. Ruth, thanks very much. It's
thank
very
you.
Very good point. Gentlemen, how big a business are we talking about? I know that the device that the company you are consulting with, Gary, makes a device, a whole hardware device, that actually sells for about $2,500, I believe. And I'm thinking, that's
a big chunk of change. That first generation of the Dacom Empower device is expensive, but it's quite elaborate. They actually are connected on the internet, and they have content, people writing new content every day. It's individualized, and it's designed not for personal use, but for institutions, so that several people within an assisted living facility can use this. They'll, I'm sure, come up with less expensive devices for home use. But it is, I mean, it's a huge area. I mean, you have huge companies like Nintendo getting involved in this area. So there's obviously interest, and people want it.
Art Kramer, Gary just mentioned institutional use. Is that happening? Are nursing homes and insurance companies beginning to buy into the concept?
It's clearly happening. I believe Humana has picked up on Mike Mersnick's Posit Science program and is distributing it free to many of their members, and they're a huge HMO. I know there are many nursing homes. I've been contacted by quite a few of them recently who are adopting some of these programs, usually in concert with exercise programs and other wellness programs that focus on healthy diets and so forth.
Can you give us a sense? You've mentioned exercise several times now. If it's something that you can explain to us laymen, the connection between exercise and a healthy brain that can remember things.
Sure. There's a good deal of both non-human animal research and human research which suggests that a number of changes take place in the brain as we exercise, and the exercise is often, with the human research, walking, so not running marathons or doing triathlons, but walking. What seems to happen is that exercise encourages the production of factors or proteins called nerve growth factors, or NGFs. And these nerve growth factors, in turn, have positive effects on neuronal function. That is, they often engender new connections among neurons, which in turn aids us to learn new skills, such as a new language, as the previous caller talked about, establish new capillary beds to provide more blood flow to different regions of the brain, and even in very selective regions of the brain create new neurons, something referred to as neurogenesis. So there are a number of changes that take place in this cascade of molecular and cellular effects of exercise, as well as learning new skills.
So the notion that we may have had a few years ago that the brain stopped growing and essentially was frozen in time is no longer current. The brain keeps changing.
As Gary mentioned, there is less plasticity, less change as we age, but there is most certainly change. And I think that was shown very beautifully by some work by Rusty Gage at UCSD a few years ago, who did some studies with brain cancer patients and found out in these middle-aged to older patients that new neurons were actually growing.
We have been getting some emails from listeners, and I want to read one from Raj in Fremont, California. He asks, can they, meaning you two gentlemen, can they suggest a few methods which we can practice every day, like pegging methods, etc.? I'm not sure what a pegging method is. Do you know?
Yeah, sure.
And can you talk to that and other things that maybe you can do on your own?
Sure. There are a number of different methods that are used to enhance memory or the transfer of information from short-term memory, that is, maintaining it in the now, here and now, to long-term memory. A pegging or pegboard method is a technique that requires or encourages you to take information you already know, and it might be walking through your house and placing new information from your shopping list in different rooms and then later going back and retrieving it. There are a number of other methods, such as rhyming, associating information with a rhyme that's well known, or first letter methods. You probably remember the statement Roy G. Bibbs, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, as a mnemonic for the colors of the rainbow, or TGIF, thank God it's Friday, or so forth.
Another method I like to teach is very simple. I call it look, snap, connect, and this is good for names and faces or lists. Look is a reminder to focus attention. The biggest reason people don't remember is they're not paying attention. Snap is a reminder to create a mental snapshot or visual image of the information. And connect is just a reminder to link up those visual images. So if you're running out of the house, you have to remember to buy eggs and stamps, see the postman carrying some eggs, so you have a little look, snap, connect.
Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily age related, though, is it? Those could be in college.
Those could be used at any age, but we find the Center on Aging at UCLA has a 5-week memory training class that now is available in about half a dozen states, and we teach these simple techniques. People from their 20s to their 90s take it, but mostly it's older people.
We're going to go now to Louisville, Kentucky, and we're bringing Sum Shi into the conversation. Sum Shi, you're on Talk of the Nation. How are you?
I'm doing okay. My mother-in-law just recently came to live with us about 6 or 8 weeks ago, and I'm wondering if there's any exercises that are particularly for short-term memory versus regular memory.
How is she? Is she doing poorly in that area?
Pardon?
Is she doing poorly with her short-term memory?
She won't. She'll have problems remembering whether or not she took a particular pill like 10 minutes ago. But yet, I mean, for 90 years old, she's sharp as a tack in conversation about things that she can draw on memory from years ago. Mm-hmm. And she's really, really very hip. But she does have problems with that. Now, is it all one big bag of tricks for exercising your memory, or are there some that are better for short-term memory? Or would it be more of a metaphysical thing, like, you know, chemicals in her body that can't be exercised?
A lot of questions there, Art. What do you think?
There are a number of ways. For this particular problem, forgetting if you've taken your medication, there are many devices that help us organize our medication. They're called medication boxes that let you know if it's no longer there that you've taken it. So you'd have different medication slots for different days for your different medications, schedulers, and so forth. But I think with somebody who's 90 years old, you might want to look into medical conditions, because there are a number of medical conditions, from cardiovascular problems and diabetes and so forth, as well as medications. Older adults tend to be on multiple medications, and a number of these medications do affect cognition and memory, so it would be worth looking into that also.
Also, in the 90-year-old age group, there's one of the biggest risk factors for Alzheimer's disease or vascular dementia is age. So it might be worth having the doctor take a look and see if there isn't something going on that might improve with treatment.
Sum Shi, thanks for your question. Another emailer, Sari, in Oakland, California, writes, I am a stay-at-home mom. I have had a lot of trouble both with memory and generally thinking straight since my 14-month-old was born. I am now home with my 1-year-old and 3-year-old, Do you have any suggestions for exercises that would sharpen my mind that I can do while watching my kids? And if anything, it sounds as though she's got a whole lot going on in her life with a lot of distractions, but I don't know if that's relevant. Gentlemen?
Well, you know, first of all, a lot of people refer to this as mommy brain. I mean, you've got a lot going on. You've got hormonal changes. You've got lots of immediate demands on your short-term memory to keep track of all these kids. So often, you know, we've talked, artists talked about exercise and diet. Another important thing to keep in mind is stress and finding ways to reduce stress. And I often teach brief relaxation exercises. You can try meditation. You can try to get some help in some of the tasks that are going on, and also add some of those organizational skills are very important to help with all the challenges of memory. Any of us who has moved knows how difficult it is, how many memory challenges we have with any kind of disruption of our routine.
And Art, it sounds like you've got to have friends, that helps enormously.
You have to have friends. Certainly having a social network helps. The literature is quite convincing there that it can reduce the effects of various cognitive stressors. But I was thinking with your the last person who contacted you, more sleep would probably be good if she has a number of kids. And if somebody can help her out and allow her to get more sleep, that too would improve memory.
All right, we're going to go to another caller, Elizabeth in Cleveland. Apparently you have played some of these games, Elizabeth. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Yes, in January of this year, I bought the MindFit program. It's a software program, and I work the exercises about three times a week. It's about 25 minutes for each set of exercises. And although, I mean, this is obviously my subjective analysis, I think my mental acuity has improved after I work these exercises. Although I find them taxing and frustrating at times, I still find my memory is better, and I really do believe that the program is helping me.
Are they boring?
Boring is not the word. Frustrating is the word.
Why?
I have a good memory. Whenever they test me, when I go through testing phases, I score very high on memory and eye-hand coordination. My spatial is awful. So what do? They give me a bunch of spatial exercises, which drives
well,
me
that's
a
the
little
point,
bit crazy.
Though. That's the point. They want to work your weak areas, I suppose.
Exactly, they do, but and I think it's improving. I think this Vigorous Mind MindFit program is helping me. But isn't it really a combination of different things from interpersonal contact and exercise and good diet and intellectual stimulating conversations along with exercises such as this, not just one single thing that's going to improve the memory?
Elizabeth, thank you. I think that's what both of our guests have been saying quite adamantly, that it's a combination of things, not all of which you need to go to a keyboard for. We have Nancy in Milwaukee sends this email. My sister-in-law had a stroke 2 years ago at age 55. Some days she remembers that my brother has passed away. Some days she asks where he is. She can only remember some of her children's names. Nancy asks, would these games help with her stroke-related memory loss? A very specific, focused use, Art. What do you think of that?
I don't know if these games or many of them yet have been used with stroke patients. With stroke patients, it often depends upon both the locus of the stroke or the damage to the brain as well as the extent of damage. So without knowing more about what kind of stroke she had and how extensive the damage was, it'd be hard to tell. But clearly there is a lot of development of rehabilitation programs for stroke patients at the present time that didn't exist that many years ago. So there very well might be specific programs that are custom-tailored to stroke patients who have different kinds of strokes.
Yeah, most of the games that are available to the consumer today are for people with minor or mild age-related memory complaints. So somebody with stroke disease or Alzheimer's disease, they would need a more specialized program to help them with more serious cognitive deficits.
Art, in the last minute we have left, where do you think this whole field is going?
I think there will be continued development of computer-based programs as well as more integrative programs. You might go to your health club in the future, I'm speculating here, and be able to sit down and do some memory training exercises or speed training exercises in terms of how quickly you process information, and then go through a prescription of certain exercises prescribed by your physician, perhaps your neuropsychologist, and then maybe get together with your friends and go out to coffee and discuss a new book you've read.
All right, Art, thanks very much for joining us. I actually want to thank both of you for taking time out on Labor Day to join us. Gary Small is the director of the UCLA Center on Aging and the author of The Memory Bible. He joined us today from his hotel in Santa Barbara, and Art Kramer is a professor of neuroscience and psychology at the University of Illinois. He joined us from his office in Champaign, Illinois. Coming up, General Joseph Hoar is on the opinion page. The United States, he says, needs to let more Iraqi refugees into the country. Stay with us. I'm John Donvan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.